alluded to this in your last comment, but I think it's important to mention because so many people think they're supposed to just keep investing forever and ever.
Yes. Right?
Like it's just a constant thing that they're always going to have to do or to manage. And they're supposed to just buy and hold and never sell.
Right.
Which, you know, unless you have centuries of wealth behind you, like likely that is not the case. So as you're thinking about the different asset classes to put your money in, you also want to consider what it requires to sell and or like create some liquidity in the event that you need cash, like
right.
cold, hard greenbacks. Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. And today's episode is about life after debt.
Yeah, all I'm hearing is Biggie right now.
Yeah. Kind of a play on that. But since we've been talking about debt and credit for the last, 2 weeks, maybe three, I don't even remember. I figured we would talk about life afterwards to
yes.
give people a vision of what life can be like once you pay it off.
Yeah.
And the reason, like the inspiration behind this episode actually came from people who were at our Atlanta book tour event. So we've, for those who are just starting listening, we've been doing this book tour for Cashing Out, and we kicked off with our Atlanta event, which was amazing. We love being out and meeting all of you and learning from you and hearing your stories. And I think what's made the book tour so special is this food element.
Yeah.
So it just opens people up to different conversations. In some cities, we do a dining experience, and in others, we don't. But I think there's something about food that just causes people to remember what question they had for us that's different from like if you're just sitting there talking about the book.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you all this because at the Atlanta dinner, I was at the table with a couple, Nicole and Greg, who we've actually met before at a previous meetup that we did about 2 years ago. And in that 2 years, they shared that they had paid off $80,000 worth of debt. Yes. And Nicole had cashed out of her corporate job to pursue entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
So very interesting story. Lovely couple. If you're interested in hearing more about their story, you can go follow them at Mediocre to Masterful on Instagram. But I just wanted to congratulate them because debt payoff is such a huge milestone. It's the thing that kind of removes the drag off of your net worth growth
yep.
and propels you into the next phase of wealth building. But they had this question for me and the table, which was basically, now that we're no longer allocating this large amount of money to debt every month, where should we put it?
What now? What do we do?
Yeah. What do I do with this?
Where do we go?
And so that question inspired this episode because it's a really good one. And as a reminder, Julian and I aren't financial advisors, so we won't be doing any customized financial advice or even giving out financial advice.
Yeah, this isn't like a case
study. Yeah.
But to your point, this is something that a lot of people struggle with because debt payoff is such a big like mountain to climb in and of itself. And so it's common for people to really obsess and to think about that experience, but to not really think about, all right, now that you've climbed that mountain or you've gone over that mountain, like here's what's on the other side. You just can't even really see it. That's actually a really cool visual, at least in my mind.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that you just can't really think about or see. And I've had similar conversations with people even years prior to the dinner that we had here in Atlanta. And it really brought me back to our own journey. Now, granted, we didn't have that challenge. Like we kind of had a plan and we knew exactly what we were going to do. But I do remember like not really knowing what it would feel like. I remember it was 2017 and it was on your birthday when we paid off the mortgage on our then primary home. And it was an amazing feeling, but it wasn't like I expected. You know what I mean? Like it was just like, okay, well, that was done. Because it's not like they give you a reward when you go into the bank.
In fact,
they were trying to sell you on something else, right? It was like, hey, all right, well, now that you've got a bunch of cash on your hand, have you thought about this? So first tip, be on the lookout for that. If you're going to be paying off your mortgage, like that's not necessarily something that your bank wants you to do.
Right.
They want to keep you on the hook. And so they're going to try to find a new hook for you to attach yourself to. But I remember those moments and I remember the month after because like for so long, I was accustomed to, I think it was like the second day of the month. this giant deposit coming mm-hmm. out of my account, and then it just never came. And then I remember even thinking like, nah, there's always something.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost like a trauma response based off of like medical billing issues where like you go, you pay for something, but then surely there's going to be like two or three more coming. And so I remember even like the second month afterwards and that third month, I was like, oh no, it's gone.
Yeah.
Like it's not coming back unless we go out and get another mortgage. But I remember it just being, you know, we've hit several milestones along our financial journey, but that was one that I think was the most fulfilling.
Yeah.
Like it was like the true like college graduation kind of feeling. And so, yeah, I can imagine.
I've definitely been chasing that high because even now, for those that don't know, we have a 5-year-old son.
Nothing else hits like completely. Nothing else hits.
Well,
like
I'm excited because we're about to make our last daycare payment.
Yes.
And it's a gigantic bill that feels like a mortgage every mm-hmm. month. And we have been paying it for several years. And so August will be the first month where we're not paying it. And I feel the same level of excitement with, you know, as Greg and Nicole do, because it's like, oh man, now I get to come up with a plan for this chunk of money.
Yeah. But I think that there is, and we may get into this again, but I think that there's definitely a psychological implication here, because with debt payoff, it's such an active activity,
if yes.
you will. Something that you're doing, that you're thinking about, that you're obsessing about. And
yes.
I think that's part of the reason why that feeling of debt payoff feels so much better than, let's say, like growth in your account. Because that's not something that you're actively doing.
Correct.
Right? You already planted the seed. The seed is literally being watered and receiving sunshine in the stock market. You're mm-hmm. not actively toiling against it. Whereas when you're paying down debt, especially as a couple, it's something that you're doing together. You're counting every dollar. You're being really purposeful about what you're doing with your money to achieve that goal. And I think that's why that particular feeling is so much more fulfilling. So, and I'm not saying that to like discourage people from like going further, just kind of giving you some advice, like having been there, like it's a great feeling. So soak it up, enjoy it, and treat yourself, you know, in any number of ways when you're done, because you're not going to get that back.
Yeah. Well, it's actually a great jumping off point to dig into how to think about the money that you now have available to you now that you're done paying debt. And so the first thing that I would do if I were you is hedge against lifestyle inflation by automating a portion of the funds to investment accounts, right? Yeah. So this is taking advantage of a little bit of psychology that Julian just mentioned, because if you were already used to the money leaving your account every mm-hmm. month to go towards this debt, you weren't spending it anyway. So instead of allowing it to sit in your account and be subject to a bunch of choices, just go ahead and pay yourself first. Carve out a portion. It can be 10% or 20% or even 50% to invest. And it doesn't have to be forever. It can just be for the first year. Sometimes if you want to be more aggressive and say like 50%, let's do that. You want to convince yourself to invest at higher rates. It can be really helpful to think of it as back pay. Right? In all of the years that you were paying down debt, you may not have had the room to invest aggressively like you wanted to. And now in this bear market, like the one that we are experiencing, it gives you a great opportunity to make up for some of the gains that you might have lost when you were paying off debt.
Yeah. And as far as like what to invest in, if you've been listening to our podcast or reading our blog or any number of other things that we do, you know that our favorite investments are index funds. They are simple. They are low cost. More importantly, they are effective. So if you don't know what an index fund is a type of mutual fund that is designed to track an index or like an indicator, which is like the Dow Jones Industrial Average or like the S&P 500 or any other number of indicators that are used to kind of gauge the performance of the overall stock market. The benefit to this approach is that since its objective is to just track, not beat the market, that index requires far less, or like investing and trying to track the index requires far less day-to-day number crunching and analysis, which is what's called like active investing. It's kind of a very chill approach. It's like, you know what? I'm not trying to do too much. Like I'm trying to keep it right here and keep it simple. And the benefit of that for you as an investor is that it's significantly less expensive than an active managed fund, right? Those active managed funds, more often than not, are designed to beat the market. And so historically, by taking this approach, you can bank on an historical 7% rate of return. This is adjusted for inflation, which is more than enough, right? Like that's not, you know, a huge number to like a crypto bro or whatever, you know, they banking on 25 or 30%. You're not going to get anything like that. But in the last couple of years, like, we have experienced
that.
But I'm just saying, historically,
yes,
when those
Well, the average
highs,
is based on moments like this combined with moments where you are seeing over 20% return.
Correct. And so we're just saying that approach. Like, you don't also have to, like, now that you're done with it, pay off, like, now commit yourself to this lifetime of learning to try to figure out how to beat the stock market. You could just decide to keep it simple and invest in something like an index fund. It is one of our favorite investments, and I think it's something that everyone should have as the foundation of their investment portfolio. Now, the kind of account, like, what you put those index funds or any other option or investment options you want, the kind of account that you put that in is entirely up to you. So you could decide to contribute more to your 401k or a 403b. You could decide to open up an IRA, whether it's a traditional or a Roth. You could decide to invest in an HSA, which is a health savings account. Any number of these are fine. That's entirely up to you. Just keep in mind that some of these accounts, I'd say most of these accounts, have penalties and fees for withdrawing that money early. And so if you're going to need that prior to the traditional retirement age, you're likely going to have to pay a fee for making that withdrawal. So it's something to be mindful of as you're thinking about where to actually house or store some of those investments. Now, if you are spooked by the stock market, which for good reason, especially if you're a newbie and you're hearing all this talk about bear markets and a recession and you just don't like the idea of your money potentially being lost. First of all, you shouldn't be. Like, this is a natural part of the cycle. But if you are, you don't have to invest. You could put that money into an emergency fund. If you already have an emergency fund, you could, again, considering some of the economic environments that we're in, choose to beef that up to account for
inflation,
the environment that we're in, the hyperinflation.
If the last time you calculated 3 to 6 months of living expenses,
that
was
might not be enough anymore.
3 years ago,
correct.
You might need to look at it again.
Correct. Now, if you've already done that or you're not concerned about that, you could then decide to put it into what's called a sinking fund, which is more often than not just a type of savings account. But the idea is that you're putting money into a savings account with a very clear end date and with a very clear purpose in mind. So it could be that you're saving up for a car. It could be a dream vacation. You always wanted to go to that. What's that fancy place in St. Lucia? Jade Mountain. You want to go to Jade Mountain because you saw it on Instagram and you just want to take that picture. It doesn't matter. Down payment on a home. You can do that as well. All of those are options. But we just wanted to make sure that we presented a few of them for you. I will throw another one out there. Just based off of what I've seen in the last couple of days, I've spent a lot more time on highways than I have in the past. And I will just say, if you're driving an older car, it's perfectly fine and might be really wise for you to set aside some of this new cushion for future car maintenance.
Yeah. Most people, like, even a newer car.
Correct. Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, most people think about it like, well, I've got an older car. Eventually, I'm going to replace it. But very rarely do people set aside money for future car maintenance. And given the number of broken down cars I've seen just in the last couple of weeks, I think that's something that a lot of people should really consider. May not have to be a huge amount of money, but it's a lot easier to deal with, like, knowing or to know that you've got $500 or $1,000 just set aside because you know you got an older car, this thing could happen. And I think it's also another psychological cushion to, like, stop you from saying the only solution is to buy something new or newish.
No, that's real. There's a heat wave going on in Georgia right now. There's all kinds of climate issues across the country.
Yep.
If your car gets damaged by hail or just overheats or
even
the air condition goes
it
out.
It could be your own home air conditioning.
Like, at least save enough to be able to afford the deductible on whatever your insurance is.
Yep.
But having a cushion there for tires, for any sort of maintenance that you have been putting off because you were hyper-focused on debt is a good thing. Because you want to use this time to create a safety net for future you. Because all it takes is one unexpected incident to put you right back in the throes of debt.
Yep.
And you can create a cycle if you don't take advantage of the times where you do have windfall cash. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a windfall that you created on your own because you've paid something off, or one that was bestowed upon you by tax returns or birthday gifts or whatever, it's up to you to build these kind of contingency funds for future you. But future you is not the only you that matters.
Current you. Future in my head.
current you is important too. And this milestone of debt payoff is a good time to kind of check in with yourself and see what investments could enhance your life today.
Yeah.
So we're assuming that you've already done the work on determining what you value, right? Like that's how you whittled down your budget enough to be able to pay down your debt. So now you want to go back to those things and see how they can be enhanced with some additional investment or capital. So for me, it's things like patio furniture. I want to be able to enjoy my outdoors in the fall when it cools down a little more. But for you, it might be upgrading your gym to one that has a heated pool, mm-hmm. or getting a personal trainer or buying a massage membership. It could be finally taking the leap and getting a high value course or starting a travel fund, to Julian's point. Like imagine if all of your travel is like prepaid for, yeah. and all you got to do is find the deal and the timing.
Yep.
Whatever it is, now is the time to add those elective personal investments to your budget as line items.
Yeah, for me, it's definitely been travel. I mean, there are a couple of things, but travel is like at the top of my list for several reasons. One, you know, the pandemic really just kind of put a halt on that. We did a little bit of travel, but not nearly as much as we typically enjoy doing, and we weren't able to do a lot of things for a lot of other reasons. But I think also because our son, who's now 5, is just like becoming a much better traveler. So
yeah,
whether I'm talking about individual travel or just family travel, like he's a lot better at it. And so it makes us, or at least me, want to go places a little bit more. But I also think travel just as a part of my own wellness plan has been something, it's like the gift that just keeps on giving.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it when you're doing it, like you think, oh, we're creating memories, but man, they came in handy just over the last couple of years where you could just on any given night, just like go through all the photos, mm-hmm. or look at some old video and say, oh my gosh, what happened? Like, I don't look like that anymore. Like,
yeah.
It's funny, but it's like also just like really, really cool because inevitably you run across something that you just may have forgotten, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like the fact that you'd already been and taken the time to capture that moment, I think really helps just to make you feel good about some of the decisions that you made. I think it helps to give that emotional boost. But even when things got bad, like there were a couple of times over the last year or two where we were thinking like, I don't know that America is for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is just getting really bad. This kind of feels like a failing experiment,
mm-hmm.
not to get like too deep down a political rabbit hole. But having traveled before, a lot of that frustration is because you know that different or better in some ways is possible because
mm-hmm.
we've been there, we'd seen it, we'd experienced it, or we know people who are already there. And so I would say if that's something that, you know, is kind of burning in your mind a little bit, do yourself that favor and go those places. And it doesn't always have to be like the super luxurious, you know, destination. Like just the other day we were talking to a friend and he was actually him and his wife, they were telling us like, man, like Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah.
It was amazing. I was like, what? Like, all I knew
was I would have never gone to Tucson.
I would have never like decided to go to Tucson. But I do love the idea of being in the desert. Like I've
yeah.
grown to love and appreciate those kinds of experiences. I would say even cities like New Orleans where we got married. Now, right now, at this moment in my life, I'm not looking for a Bourbon Street experience.
Right.
But I can do a Garden District experience,
yeah.
right? And so there might be places where you've been before, but you haven't been to the other side.
Exactly.
Right? And so maybe you go to those places.
Or yeah, just like going to New York and staying in, you know, Brooklyn or Queens or
correct.
Somewhere you've never,
correct.
A neighborhood, a borough you've never been in.
Correct. We just came back from Manhattan and man, it was hard. Like staying
yeah.
near Times Square and it was hard to get a good night's rest.
Yeah.
Because it always felt like the lights were on.
Yeah.
Like even with the shades closed, there was like beaming lights reflecting off of buildings.
Yes.
Like it felt really, really tough. And I'm like now feeling it after a couple of days of not really resting. So all of that to say there are other options out there that don't always have to be super expensive. There are low cost, you know, Latin American countries, Caribbean islands, that sort of thing that I think could be really, really helpful, especially if you're healthy and vaccinated.
Yeah. This part was my favorite part of the debt payoff process personally. I mean, I love investing and totally see the value of that practice.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes the narrative of traditional investing being a long game takes away from the quicker ROIs that you can get from other types of investments like travel that
yeah.
matter just as much. even outside of travel, I remember the day we changed our grocery habits and started shopping more at organic specialty stores and farmers markets. I remember the day we bought plane tickets and didn't have to maneuver around blackout dates and points and rewards travel and not having enough and having to add cash. I remember the day I upgraded my vitamins to a vegan brand and got a membership and started going to the sauna, to the chiropractor. Mm-hmm. I consider all of these expenses investments in my mental health and wellness. I don't view them as taking away from my financial goals, although by nature, they may alter the timeline of when I hit the goals, right? And the best part of all of this is that we could cancel them at any time. If I decide that it's not worth it anymore, I can reallocate the money elsewhere. It doesn't create this big taxable event if I change my mind like some of the investments would. So for anyone who's out there that has a little extra cash, again, whether it's because you paid off debt or got a raise or got an inheritance, like just think about holistic wealth and not just the financial gains.
Treat yourself.
Yes, a little bit. Don't overdo it.
All right. So you alluded to this in your last comment, but I think it's important to mention because so many people think they're supposed to just keep investing forever and ever.
Yes. Right?
Like it's just a constant thing that they're always going to have to do or to manage. And they're supposed to just buy and hold and never sell.
Right.
Which, you know, unless you have centuries of wealth behind you, like likely that is not the case. So as you're thinking about the different asset classes to put your money in, you also want to consider what it requires to sell and or like create some liquidity in the event that you need cash, like cold, hard greenbacks. One of the reasons we created a business is because we didn't want to have to sell our positions or like tap into our retirement portfolios or taxable brokerage accounts every time we needed some cash. So for us, owning multiple businesses is a way to generate income without having to do that or having to your point, trigger some type of taxable event that I then have to explain to my CPA or like going as far as like having to take out home equity loan or using credit cards. And I think there's a larger, more, you know, kind of point here, which is that a lot of the wealth we celebrate, that people celebrate in terms of what they've been able to do and the gains, is like it's all paper money. It's variable, and it exists on paper or in some cases just on a screen, right? It's just market valuation of the home or the property that you have or the value of the stock in any given moment of time. And it's not something that, like, I'm not going to say it's not real, but like in a world where you need hard cash, like that doesn't add very much value to your life. You need cash to buy things.
If you need cash, you have to sell something.
Or you will have to sell something, right? So you have to factor that in and make sure that you are able to respond accordingly. And I think, you know, to the point of having a business or creating some type of income generating asset, having those options where and when you need it really helps to kind of make your financial plan inflation proof to a degree. It just helps to suffocate your ability or willingness to tap into that emergency fund and all of that stuff. So it's certainly something to think about after your debt-free journey and you're thinking, well, all right, what am I building? How am I going to construct this system of money that both serves my short-term and my long-term needs?
Yeah. And another thing you'll see is retirees. So if you don't want to put all of the money into your retirement account, you also don't want to manage or create an income-generating asset, you also see retirees with much, much larger cash balances on hand because they've been around the block a few times and have been through a few recessions.
Yeah.
And they know that cash is also a position.
Yeah.
So some of our friends have as much as 2 years of cash on hand, 2 years worth of living expenses in cash on hand at any given time, so that when there are recessions like this, when there are, well, let me not claim a recession, when there are downturns like this, they can have another place to pull money from instead of needing to sell stock or borrow from their home equity.
Yeah, and here's what I'll say to that. That does not mean if you're at this juncture, you sort of pass through that debt freedom door, that if you're saying, you know what, I want to have that thick, like beyond security blanket, like you want to have a security comforter,
right?
Like you want to have 2 years of expenses so it doesn't matter what happens, you feel like you can go 2 years
without
it. That doesn't mean that you need to start funding that right now.
Right.
It could be that, you know what, one of my goals at year five, right? Yes. Like I'm fine with having 6 months right now, 9 months right now. I want to invest my money, but I'm also committing to that. If I see the type of return that I plan on, that I might go ahead and carve out a little bit after year five or after year seven, whatever that number is, and then use that little bit of money to sell a slight position, a couple of shares, handful, whatever it is, to then go ahead and say, all right, now this is my comforter, right? So you don't have to sacrifice potential growth for the next 5-7 years or even the long term because you want to have that comforter now. You might say, all right, 1 year is enough, but after 5 years, I want to go ahead and get that comforter.
Yeah.
And it's going to come from selling. And while you're still going to have to pay taxes, likely capital gains on whatever you sell a few years down the line, like there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, you just want to factor in like the order in which you go ahead and create that type of protective layer over your finances.
Yep.
So we've spoken about hedging against lifestyle inflation by automating your investments. We spoke about the paycheck to paycheck cycle and how to mitigate that by beefing up your emergency fund. We spoke a little bit about sinking funds and all of the different uses of those. We also spoke about investing in your own like mental and physical health and how all of those things can really kind of add to your overall well-being, as well as prioritizing income generating assets to make sure that you have some flexibility when things continue to go south. But the last thing I want to talk about is giving, because I think that's a really, really important part that I don't hear enough about.
Yeah.
And so I want to talk a little bit more about giving. Talk about philanthropy and just some of the things that I've seen. I think a lot of people really think about giving like from a philanthropist and billionaire's perspective, right? Like they only think about the big stuff, the people that are funding HBCUs
or the cancer research
or having libraries, you know, named after them. And I was like, no, there's a lot like of stuff happening at a much smaller level. And quite honestly, like, those needs are reliant on regular people like you and I to do. Like,
you
consider yourself lucky if a billionaire decides to pick your organization or your city, because you would be. But for everyone else, they're reliant on everyday people to actually solve some of those problems. And so I would encourage you to look in your own backyard, to look at the things that actually matter to you. Because I think especially for workers that work for, you know, someone else's company, if there's some type of community service layer to the work that you do, oftentimes the terms and the organization are dictated by somebody else.
Yeah.
After your debt-free journey is done, and even before then, you're now in a position where you can actually choose who and how much you want to give at any point in time. Like, surprise, surprise, you don't have to wait until, you know, Giving Tuesday or the holiday season to give. You can decide to give anytime you want, as much as you want, because now you're in a position to do so without it having some type of hiccup or impact on your own financial well-being.
Ooh, I love that. I have a response, but I'm going to save it for my final thought.
Oh, okay. That sounds like cheating, but okay. Well, what's your final thought?
Okay, so let me give a little bit of a precursor, but ultimately, again, if you've been listening...
precursor to the final thought.
No, I should have just responded. It's fine.
I don't want to respond.
I'm going to give my final thought. But let me build my response.
Let me build a precursor to my final thought.
Ultimately, I view money as a tool to improve my quality of life. And so whenever I have extra, whether it's because I paid off debt or got a promotion or a new job, that kind of mantra becomes my North Star around how I want to use it. I ask myself what kind of life I want to live, and then I use my money to close the gap. I can invest and cut down the number of days I'm required to trade my time and labor for money, or I can spend it on something that brings me joy in the moment and elevates the everyday. So my final thought is, if you're feeling stuck about what to do with your money, what purpose to give it, start with asking yourself those questions. In what way could this money help me be a better neighbor or a better friend or a more energized and empathetic parent? Because you don't need us to tell you what to do with your money. Start with the internal work and then just kind of see where that leads you.
Yeah, I love that. I'm just going to go back to that feeling. I'm going to try my best to try to communicate what that feeling felt like, that feeling of debt freedom. Because it is, I call it a cocktail, but like it's a lot. Like it's joy, it's confusion. But I would say, you know, if you feel overwhelmed by the options that are available to you, my response to you is congratulations. Like, yeah. Like what a privilege to have so many options available to you. Like that's what you worked so hard for. So congratulations. Now it's just a matter of deciding, all right, what do I do next? And what is the order? What is the frequency in which I want to do those things? And, you know, I would just say as a humble reminder that you don't have to achieve all your dreams at once. Yeah. And there's no penalty for reprioritizing them. If travel isn't as high on your list now as it was a few years ago, because maybe now you have a child or, you know, whatever, maybe you have a health issue, then move it further down the list. If taking up a hobby is something that you really want to do and to tackle right now, and it's going to require you to buy equipment or move some things around, then feel free to do that. If you feel confident that you actually have enough in your emergency fund and your retirement accounts to walk away from your job because it's just not as fulfilling anymore, congratulations, cash out. We wrote a book for you. Like, you're right. You know, this is something that I think is available to you, and I want to be available to more people. But rarely are you making a bad decision when you are making the decision to invest in yourself. And I think after debt payoff, there's no bad choice, really. It's just a matter of picking the degree of growth or the kind of growth that you're looking for. But every single one of them after that is pretty much going to add value in some way to your life. So congratulations to Greg and Nicole. We love you guys. Appreciate you guys showing up. For all the other Greg and Nicole's out there, congratulations if you're close to achieving that journey. And we hope you inspire other families to do the same.
Yes. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you made it this far, congratulations. And if you like what you heard, please take some time to leave us a 5-star rating and review on the podcast review page. We'll see y'all next week.